I want to discuss what I think may be a new argument for panpsychism. I'd like to add this novel argument to panpsychism's quiver, along with the argument from vagueness, the argument from experience of causation, the inferential argument, and the intrinsic nature argument, to name a few. Before we get into the argument itself, we need to lay some logical groundwork. On his excellent blog, The Secular Outpost, J.J. Lauder brought to my attention a type of inductive logical argument he calls an F-inductive argument. This would be an argument in which, quote, "the evidence to be explained favors one explanatory hypothesis over one or more of its rivals," end quote. Lauder is building off the extensive work of philosophers of religion Paul Draper and Richard Swinburne, the latter of whom has drawn a useful distinction between two types of inductive argument, C-inductive and P-inductive. A C-inductive argument is an argument in which the evidence to be explained adds to the probability of the conclusion, adds to the probability. A P-inductive argument is an argument in which the evidence to be explained makes the conclusion probable. As Lauder explains, quote, "it seems to me that there's a third type of inductive argument which should go between the two. I'm going to dub it the F-inductive argument. F-inductive arguments are stronger than C-inductive arguments insofar as they show that the evidence to be explained not only adds to the probability of hypothesis 2 over hypothesis 1, but that the evidence is more probable on the assumption that hypothesis 2 is true. They are weaker than P-inductive arguments, however, because they don't show that the evidence is ultima facie evidence. They don't show that the evidence makes hypothesis 2 probable overall. Although I believe I'm the first to give F-inductive arguments a name and place within Swinburne's taxonomy of inductive arguments, the structure for such arguments is not mine. Paul Draper deserves the credit for that." End quote. Lauder emphasizes the fact that an argument with this F-inductive structure doesn't settle the question once and for all. One could make a strong F-inductive argument for a position they don't agree with. In fact, Lauder has done so. They can show that one hypothesis is probably true, other evidence held equal. Whereas P-inductive arguments can show that a hypothesis is probably true, period. F-inductive arguments, writes Lauder, leave open the possibility that there may be other evidence which favors the competing explanatory hypothesis. Indeed, they are compatible with the situation where the total evidence favors the opposing explanatory hypothesis. End quote. Point being, even if you're not a panpsychist, you should be able to grant that this argument for panpsychism works. Panpsychism is the view that consciousness is fundamental and ubiquitous in the natural world. That doesn't imply that every arbitrary collection of mind stuff is a subject of experience, but it does imply that everything is experience involving in one way or another. For our purposes, we need only note that the hypothesis of panpsychism, since it posits consciousness in some form as fundamental, entails the existence of consciousness. On panpsychism, our universe could not have evolved in such a way that consciousness wouldn't exist. Consciousness isn't surprising on panpsychism in the way that it is on physicalism, or property dualism, or neutral monism, or any competing views that do not entail the existence of consciousness. In that sense, the existence of consciousness is evidence favoring panpsychism over its rivals. So here's the structure of the F-inductive argument from consciousness for panpsychism. Premise 1, consciousness exists, or the illusion of consciousness exists, if you like. Premise 2, panpsychism is not intrinsically much less probable than physicalism. Premise 3, the probability of consciousness existing on the hypothesis of panpsychism is greater than the probability of consciousness existing on the hypothesis of physicalism. Therefore, other evidence held equal, panpsychism is probably true. Here's the crucial fact. Panpsychism entails the existence of consciousness, whereas there is no such entailment on physicalism. Nor is there any such entailment on most of panpsychism's rivals. That's what gets this argument off the ground. To be clear, panpsychism is compatible with the non-existence of human consciousness, but it is not compatible with the non-existence of consciousness. Physicalism, on the other hand, is compatible with the non-existence of consciousness. So is neutral monism and property dualism and so on. But it's not just that physicalism is compatible with the non-existence of consciousness. The existence of consciousness is rather surprising on physicalism, whereas it is not surprising on panpsychism. And to be clear, F-inductive arguments don't require that a hypothesis entails the evidence in question, but it doesn't hurt. When Paul Draper makes an effinductive argument, he often uses an illustration with two jars of jelly beans. One is filled with 90% red beans and 10% blue beans. The other is filled with 90% blue beans and 10% red beans. Someone takes a bean from a jar, we don't know which, and places it on the table before us. It's a red bean. So which jar do we think it came from? The evidence in this case is compatible with the bean coming from either jar, but it's surprising if it came out of the second jar, and not so surprising on the assumption that it came out of the first. The red bean is evidence favoring the hypothesis that it came out of one jar and not the other. Panpsychism renders the evidence in this case likely, to be expected, but it'd be very surprising to come across it in a physicalist universe. The probability of consciousness existing on panpsychism is 1, 100%. On physicalism, it's less than 1. I don't know exactly what it is, nobody does, but most physicalists are happy to admit that it's possible for consciousness to never have been. In fact, many physicalists grant that it's exceedingly strange that consciousness exists. This is not so on panpsychism. In a world in which panpsychism is true, consciousness in one form or another will exist. So the fact that we find ourselves in a world where consciousness exists is evidence favoring panpsychism over physicalism. All I really need for this argument to work is that panpsychism entails the existence of consciousness while physicalism does not. That's essentially why I don't think this argument should be controversial. The evidence to be explained favors any view which entails the evidence over any view which does not entail the evidence. But the case for panpsychism over physicalism is especially strong, since the existence of consciousness is extremely surprising on physicalism. Physicalism is a view which renders the evidence to be explained unexpected. This argument for panpsychism only works against its rivals which do not entail the existence of consciousness. If idealism also entails consciousness, then this particular argument doesn't help. It would be as if there were one yellow bean in the panpsychism jar and one yellow bean in the idealism jar, and we drew the yellow bean. The existence of consciousness doesn't favor panpsychism over idealism. Fortunately for us, most of the opponents of panpsychism do not hold views that entail the existence of consciousness. So we do have a genuine explanatory edge here. It's as if there are two groups here, one of whom thinks concrete objects emerge from abstract objects, while the other suggests that we simply begin with concrete objects. Why should we have to start with abstract objects and put them together in such a way that concreta emerge? In a world where fundamental reality consists of abstract objects, it's pretty strange that we would come across concrete objects. Whereas in a world where fundamental reality is concrete, it's not strange at all. Again, the probability of consciousness on panpsychism is 1. But on physicalism, it's rather surprising. So the fact that we drew this red bean is evidence favoring the panpsychism jar over the physicalism jar. On panpsychism, consciousness was always going to exist in one form or another. But on physicalism, consciousness could have never been. On physicalism, it's actually pretty surprising that it would exist at all. So the fact that there is consciousness means, other evidence held equal, we should lean heavily in favor of panpsychism. So to reiterate the argument, premise 1, consciousness exists. Premise 2, panpsychism is not intrinsically much less probable than physicalism. Premise 3, the probability of consciousness existing on the hypothesis of panpsychism is greater than the probability of consciousness existing on the hypothesis of physicalism. Therefore, other evidence held equal, panpsychism is probably true. Perhaps the second premise, that the intrinsic probability of panpsychism is not much less than the intrinsic probability of physicalism, needs more of a defense. The intrinsic probability is the likelihood of a view before we've taken into account any of the evidence. I'm not exactly sure how we should go about determining the intrinsic probability of panpsychism or physicalism. The point of the second premise is just to say that they're starting off on roughly equal footing. I think that's reasonable. They're both internally coherent. They're both forms of monism. I would argue that Russellian panpsychism is simpler and less metaphysically profligate than physicalism, but nevertheless, I'd be happy to grant the second premise. Again, the point is just to say that panpsychism and physicalism are beginning at roughly the same starting line. I have some ideas about how the second premise might be attacked, but I want to hear from you if you're so inclined. If you think something relevant is not being taken into account that bears onto, or any other part of the argument, feel free to let me know. I plan on doing a follow-up on criticism. You can get in touch with me over Twitter or Facebook pretty easily. So that's the affinductive argument from consciousness for panpsychism. It relies on the fact that the evidence, consciousness in this case, is not surprising on the hypothesis of panpsychism, but is surprising on the hypothesis of physicalism, as well as many of panpsychism's rivals. The probability that consciousness would exist on panpsychism isn't just high, it's one. The probability that we'd find this evidence in a physicalist universe is pretty low. So, other evidence held equal, panpsychism has a notable edge here. Again, this is an inductive argument, not a deductive argument, so you could accept that this is a solid argument without endorsing panpsychism, since a successful affinductive argument is compatible with a situation wherein the total evidence weighs against the conclusion. I don't think this is the last word on anything. I think it should be part of a cumulative case for panpsychism. If you look in the show notes and scroll to the bottom, I show my work, which is really Jeff Lauder's work. For what it's worth, Lauder is not a panpsychist. I feel like I should mention that. But if you'd like to see how this argument actually works, you can look there in the show notes. So, thank you for listening. I've been Emerson Green, and I'll talk to you next time. Thank you.